to Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're here to render judgment on the worlds of celebrity, pop culture, television, and fashion.
Strap yourselves in for some hardcore opinionating, darlings.
This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Oh, Lorenzo's laughing already.
I'm sorry.
All right, don't cut us off. We're going to go. We're going.
No, that's fine.
Especially
go ahead.
Since this is like the 30th start this morning.
Oh, my God. Shut up.
Oh, my God. Shut up. Anyway, this is Tom and Lorenzo's Bicker Fest, where we bicker and laugh and make no sense for the next 45 minutes. No. Here's what it really is. It's Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest. I am your lovely host, Tom, and that is your lovely host, Lorenzo, my husband.
We're lovelies.
And I completely screwed up the intro for the first time in years.
I know. You're fired.
You're a curveball. Anyway, we're a little punchy this morning, which, no lie, is partially because we just recorded our new intro for this show, and that is not something we're used to doing. So we had to put on our NPR voices and pretend like we knew what we were doing. Anyway. How are you all, kittens? How are you, Lorenzo?
I know. I'm wonderful.
Are you wonderful? It was kind of a stressful week.
I'm ready for fall.
Winter is fall.
But like real fall.
It's super fall outside. What are you talking about?
It keeps changing. It was like 7 degrees the other day. Anyway, and pumpkin pie, my favorite.
You're always bringing it back to food.
I know. I'm sorry. Anyway, I love my pumpkin pie.
Good. I was actually thinking about making one this weekend.
You make the best pumpkin. And your crust is getting better.
I should make the coconut custard pie.
I still have coconut left from the last one I made. That was absolutely
amazing. Are we making you hungry, guys? Okay.
Yes, I know. Anyway.
We're kind of rambling because the show is, well, it's actually not all that are all over the place. We are actually going to touch in on this week's midterm elections. If you've listened to this show for any length of time, you know that we really don't get into the politics stuff too much, except when we're talking about semiotic stuff or where it crosses over with fashion or where it crosses over with celebrity. So what was notable from our perspective, well, from a lot of perspectives, but the one notable thing that jumped out at us for the purposes of this podcast was the fact that there were major, major, major celebrity endorsements that came out in this electoral cycle that did not necessarily shift the needle toward a win. And that's not the biggest news in the world, but I think what really struck the two of us was the women who actually did come out. They are three of the most, literally three of the most influential women in the world. When we're talking about the arena of entertainment, it's Beyonce, Taylor Swift, and Oprah. And also, to a lesser extent, Rihanna came out this week. Right. And those are women with just enormous social and cultural influence. Like, Beyonce and Oprah are just, like, next-level stuff. And Taylor Swift, I don't want to... Ooh, I don't know if this will get me in trouble, but in a way, what Beyonce is to black women, Taylor Swift is to millennial white girls. There is... she is an identifying figure that gives voice to a certain middle-class sort of millennial white girl.
Right.
And they have followed her since their teenage years or their tween years and are now of voting age. And then there's Oprah, who is just this massively influential woman to women across the board. Women of all walks of life, cultures, backgrounds, racial, ethnic, social, whatever. Oprah is literally one of the most influential women in the world.
And I also think it's fantastic that these people you just mentioned, they're all women, and we need their voices.
Well, this was an election all about women.
Right, and we need their voices more than anything right now. And it was just wonderful.
Not for nothing, but I named four women. Three of them were black and one was white.
Right,
that should be noted as well.
Exactly. I was really surprised, particularly with Taylor Swift, because she tends to just stay away from the whole thing.
Right.
And I have to say, as a celebrity with a major, major MAGA following on social media and everywhere, it must be tough to take a position because, you still have your career. You still...
I'll be a little blunt here. Taylor Swift is a Southern white girl.
Right.
Well, I mean, her background is from all over the place, but I think she kind of identifies as a Southern white girl at this point. There's a certain cultural idea of how she's supposed to conduct herself, especially in terms of things like politics.
Right.
So the idea of her coming out to her followers, especially specifically her followers in Tennessee, because she came out in support of the Tennessee Senate race, in support of the Democratic candidate, that's a big deal. That's in some ways, that's a really brave move for her to do that. The potential for backlash from her own fandom is enormous. Right. Whereas I got to say, I don't mean to take anything away, but Oprah knocking doors for Stacey Abrams, that's not going to hurt Oprah's image in the slightest. Win or lose, that's not going to hurt Oprah's image. There's not going to be backlash from her own followers. And as for Beyonce, she endorsed Beto O'Rourke, but she did it through Instagram on the morning of the election, and people were kind of annoyed with her for that.
Really? I didn't see that part.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of like, well, what the hell's the point doing this now? On the one hand, I don't deny that that was my thought as well. I was like, well, okay, but this is probably not going to have any effect on the election at all,
right,
because
right.
people are out voting while you're doing this.
Right.
On the other hand, celebrities don't have this responsibility. They don't have to come out and endorse candidates. And as I think this electoral cycle proved, there's not necessarily a payoff for it. You know what I mean? Like,
right, right.
It remains to be seen. Stacey Abrams is going to a runoff, so I don't know. But I don't think Stacey Abrams, win or lose, I don't think Oprah moved the needle all that much for Stacey Abrams.
Right.
I don't think Beyonce did, obviously, because she came out so late. And Taylor Swift, what I will give Taylor Swift out of this is that she mobilized a huge voter registration turnout.
Right. I was going to say that.
Broke records in her state.
It's not just suggesting a candidate. It's actually suggesting young people to vote, to take a stand, to register, to have a voice, mm-hmm. Especially her generation and people younger than her, because, you know, she has a lot of fans that are much younger than her.
Right.
So all these people, I think it's fantastic. And then when I went on social media, when I went on Twitter, and I hear all these people, like, well, we see, you know, why did they do it? It didn't matter. It did matter. They didn't win, but they changed they changed the conversation. They added so much to it. Made people think, made people change their opinion about something. And a lot of people vote. I mean, you see, like, you know...
I think you're giving it more credence than I do.
Oh, I
do. But go ahead.
No, I do. I mean, like the whole situation in Florida with Gillum, right? That he lost by 1%. And you say, well, he lost whatever. No, yes, he lost, but by 1% in a place like Florida. So, you have to give these people credit. And I do give credit for the fight, for the, you know, for...
Oh, yeah, I don't take any of them away for the attempt.
It's the attempt.
I think...
It's changing the conversation and showing that things are changing.
I think any celebrity can do that if they want. I don't think it should be held against celebrities if they choose not to, or if they do it, as Beyonce did, rather too late to make much of a difference. Because, again, I keep coming back to this point, and you and I are not quite in sync on this. I keep coming back to this point that too much importance is put on them as political figures, because they don't move the needle. Not with votes, not necessarily. Not with votes that win elections. I do think they have an effect. And as I pointed out, Taylor Swift is credited with getting, like breaking all these Tennessee voter registration numbers.
So it does matter.
Again, though, my fear... And I don't want to sound condescending, but okay, Taylor Swift, you're a fan of Taylor Swift in Tennessee. As such, she mobilizes you for the first time to go out and register to vote because she said so. Your vote doesn't seem to do anything because you lost. You're an unengaged voter who came into voting because you're a fan of a pop star. How engaged is that voter going forward? Unless Taylor keeps it up, and I wouldn't expect her to. She's not supposed to. But what you do is you push all these new voters out based on a pop star recommendation, and their first experience with voting is a huge disappointment. So I don't know. That doesn't strike me as the best way to pull people into the electoral process, to pull people into voting.
But how much?
I'm not taking anything away from Taylor herself.
Right.
I mean, what I mean generally is the people in politics, and I got to say specifically Democrats, because they are the recipients of so much celebrity support, way, way more than Republicans are, so that they can actually like sift through which support they want to, which endorsements they want from celebrities. And I just think you can't place, the cats are fighting in the background. You can't, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, I think it's not a great idea to place too much importance on any celebrity involvement in politics. It's fine, it's welcome, but they're not they're not going to move the needle, not in the long term. If anything has come out in the last electoral cycle that I think Americans are really starting to come around on, possibly maybe still struggling with, is the work of politics is long and slow and incremental and done bit by bit by bit. And it's not really done by famous people or big, you know, people who suck all the oxygen out of the room. It's done bit by people on the small, people in the background. Again, I'm giving a speech here. I will turn this back over to you. I support all of them. And I even support, I think people know that we're liberal here, but I even support if there are conservative celebrities out there who want to endorse conservative politicians, I'm not going to get all up in arms about that. They have that right. But I treat all of it with a grain of salt. And I think the outcome this week is just supports that idea for me that it's fine, but you got to treat it with a grain of salt.
Right, but I think the great lesson here is, the biggest lesson here, in my opinion, is that people are fed up, people are not happy, whatever side you are, but you are not happy, and the only thing you can do to change is to vote, is to to engage. And I think that's what these celebrities are doing, opening their eyes. And listen, I'm not influenced by celebrities. I wouldn't say 100% that I'm not 100% influenced. I'd say I'm not as influenced as a lot of people are out there. So I do think it matters. I mean, you see Chris Evans, for example. I mean, you read his tweets, and I'm like, my God, do you still going to have a career after this? That's what I mean. Like, you know, people are really putting themselves out there to speak their minds and influence in a way, or to create, or to engage and create a dialogue that anyone can be part of. So I do think that it matters. I do think I was very, really impressed with Taylor Swift. I mean, you know, you expect Oprah to be Oprah and have a voice, and Beyonce as well to a certain extent, but especially Taylor Swift, I was shocked.
I agree. You know what's not shocking is our lovely friends at Poshmark, where you can find some amazing deals on gently used fashion. Poshmark is more than just a shopping destination. It's a vibrant community powered by millions of seller stylists who not only sell their personal style, but also curate looks for their shoppers, creating the most connected shopping experience in the world. Join us. How does it work? You take a photo and upload to your closet in less than 60 seconds right from your phone. You share listings to your network for shoppers to discover. More sharing equals more sales. And shipping is easy with our prepaid label, and you got cash in your pocket when the item is delivered. I've been through the items on Poshmark, and there's some really great stuff. It's not all vintage stuff. I mean, it's sellers who have, I mean, look at this really cute pair of Christmas socks that I'm looking at right now.
Sometimes you buy something and you didn't even open
it. Still got the tags on it. It's still in the box.
But you wanna get rid of it, and this is the best way to do it.
All right, look at these Gucci boots.
I know. I love it. I love it because you get rid of stuff in your closet that you're not wearing, you're not using, that you bought, and you change your mind, and you know you wasted your money, but then you can sell it. And it's an easy way to sell it from your home.
It's super easy.
From your place.
Using your phone.
Yes, exactly.
You download the free Poshmark app, and Poshmark carries women, kids, and men, has tons of brands to shop from, and you won't believe the deals that you'll find. And it's the easiest way to buy and sell fashion items. Shipping is easy for both the seller and the buyer. They're super fast shipping. If you see something that you want, you can make the seller an offer, and you share your Poshmark closet handle telling your fans to find you on the app. It's actually a lot of fun. It makes buying and selling fashion so much more interactive and socially motivated.
Right.
Which can be a lot of fun. If you're someone who really loves fashion, then absolutely you should make the idea of browsing through vintage wares or people reselling wares, you absolutely should make that part of your style evolution. So here's what you need to do. Listeners of Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest get $5 off their first purchase. Just enter the invite code TLO5 when you sign up. That's invite code TLO5 by visiting Poshmark.com. That's Poshmark.com. And use promo code TLO5. Thank you, Poshmark. Okay, so wrapping up the electoral stuff, is there anything else that you really wanted to say? Because like I said, I'm looking at, there's an article right here on The Root that's about Beyonce and Rihanna, and it's, people are questioning this week whether it's really something that you should get excited about.
Yeah, but there are certain things, like in the case of Rihanna, for example, she has the right to say no to her song, to her music.
Well, that's not, she actually came out and endorsed someone. But yes.
Yes. I mean, we're talking about endorsing, but at the same time, you know, you see all these singers and composers out there, songwriters out there, complaining that they're, you know, the man is playing their songs and they did not authorize and they don't want it. They don't want them to play their music. So it's interesting to see that, to see all that stuff going on. It's crazy.
Everything's politics now.
It is. I mean, it's very stressful entire time. Like you get, I mean, we are on the computer the whole time and it's very hard to not read stuff all the time. I mean, it got to a point that I used to read my feed at the gym and it was really affecting my workout and just, so I decided not to, you know, put my phone aside. I put my phone away while I'm working out now. And at home, we can't avoid because we're on the computer all the time. So it is tough, yeah. Anyway.
So there you have it, the Tilo opinion on celebrity endorsements.
Yes.
I believe that Lorenzo and I are not entirely on the same page here. He's a lot more open to the idea of them, and I'm a little more sanguine about them. I don't mind them, but I don't think they necessarily... I don't think they've proven themselves to accomplish much. And I actually think there's polls and stuff to back that up, that celebrities don't actually move the needle all that much. I read an article this morning that said the only proven instance of it was Oprah coming out for Obama in the primary in 08 when she was supposedly attributed to like a million votes shifting in his direction. And that was a specific example of... you had a black candidate and a female candidate who were vying for the election, and you had a woman who could speak to, you know, black people and women. Those were her audiences. So she could come out and say, this is the one you have to pick. You have a choice here, but this is the one that you should go
with. Well, it's also hard.
So it was very specifically tailored to Oprah. Having said that, I think Stacey Abrams's campaign was also very specifically tailored to Oprah to come out and do something. And everyone was blown the hell away by her speech last week, which was a gorgeous,
it was really gorgeous.
Political speech. And of course, it got everyone talking about Oprah running for office. And she really is not being coy about this as much as the political press wants to act like she is. She does not want to run for office. And I think it's very clear why she doesn't want to run for office. She's very private. We don't really know that much about Oprah's day-to-day life anymore.
I mean, I also think that the issue is a little bigger than that. I mean, no matter how much support these celebrities give to certain, you know, candidates, you know, it's a little bigger than that. It's votes, suppressing votes and stealing votes and all that stuff that, you know, you have to take all that stuff in consideration. So, all right, how much is being actually counted in terms of celebrities? Anyway, but that's that.
Yes, let's stay off the politics.
I will
get to the celebrity stuff, sweetie. Okay, let's
fine.
Stay off that stuff.
Anyway,
back to Oprah.
Yeah,
many
Oprah
people
wonderful.
Talked about her going into politics after this speech last week, but this is why I roll my eyes at sort of the vapidity of political coverage in this country sometimes. It's because she gave a good speech. That does in no way indicate that she would make a good presidential candidate or whatever else people are aspiring for her. She's a good closer. She's great to come in and help these candidates out. And Stacey Abrams, it may actually still happen for her. I'm not trying to discount Oprah completely because I do think she is can be a powerful force in politics without actually being a politician. That's my, and I think she, of all the women that we've discussed, is most well suited to that. She started out as a journalist. She's, you know,
right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think Beyonce or Taylor Swift would necessarily make great politicians, but I can see why people think Oprah would. I can also completely respect her and believe her when she says she has no interest in being.
No, one. And I hope she doesn't because, you know, one.
She'll get eaten alive.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and no, we don't. Yeah, we need experienced people in the White House.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
Our experience as with someone not experienced, you know, fail badly.
And on that note, we're going to move away from politics and celebrity, and we're going to talk a little bit more about TV this week. First, Lorenzo has his latest brooding Scandinavian detective show to talk. Remember, a couple months ago, it was all crying people in hijabs.
Oh, my God.
Well, now he's moved on to really gorgeous blonde guys with beards solving crimes. I see when I walk past the TV anymore in our living room. Okay, and then when we're done that, in the last half of this podcast, we're going to do a deep dive on Julia Roberts' new show for Amazon, Homecoming, which dropped a week ago. I never got around to writing a review of it this week, but that's actually good for us because we both really want to dive deep on this podcast. It's a show with a lot of twists and turns. It's 10 episodes, and each episode is a half hour long, which is super awesome. And I'm telling you this now before our discussion because we are going to get into the spoilers of it. And if you want, you could binge it in one weekend because it's really not that big a commitment. So if you want to wait to listen to that last half of the podcast, that's fine. We are going to get into some spoilery stuff because it's all kinds of twists and turns and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
But before we do that, Mr. Lorenzo, please, please, please tell us about your latest softcore Scandinavian porn obsession.
No, actually, as you guys know, I'm always looking for new shows, and I found a new show, a Norwegian show called Nobel, as in Nobel Peace Prize. I don't know why. Prize. It's such a weird name for the show, but it's part of the story. You understand why they named the show Nobel, but it's still interesting and strange. It's a Norwegian show. It's about a lieutenant returning home from a deployment from in Afghanistan. And it's very interesting. It's war, but it's not so much about the war. So it's not heavily focused on the war, but it's focused pretty much on his return home and dealing with his family. And somehow, I don't want to get into all the details so I don't spoil anything, but he gets involved with some international politics and things get a little complicated when he returns home. But it's a very interesting show. I like the fact that it focuses a little bit on the family. And, you know, and we've seen a lot of shows of soldiers returning home and dealing, especially with their spouses. We see a lot of the, you know, their conflicts and dealing with returning home and facing the spouses back again. What I like about this show is that it deals more, I mean, it does deal with, I mean, he has his wife and, you know, there's stuff going on with him and his wife, but there's also his kid. And I love that it's focused a little bit on the kid and how the kid reacts to the whole thing and the idea that his father is fighting in the war. So it's very, very interesting, I thought. And then they visit the grandfather, and there's also the grandfather part of the story. I thought it was a great show. It's only 8 episodes. That's what I like about these short shows, or, you know, quick one season shows, is that you're done and you have. What I love about these shows, and I mentioned this many, many times, is that I have a lot of experience. I mean, I've always loved international films, but what I love about Netflix, and again, Netflix is not sponsoring anything or paying us anything. It's just I find Netflix easy to find anything. What I love about this is that it is really changing, transforming my TV experience. Because, you know, in the past, I always had access to films. But this time, I'm actually having access to shows, to series, whole series, international series that if it wasn't for Netflix or other places, I wouldn't have access to or I wouldn't watch them. And I really, really love them. Because you get to meet, as I said, you're introduced to TV stars, famous TV stars out there that you don't know about, that you don't know them because they're not famous here in the United States. And they're fantastic actors, fantastic people with a lot of talent. So I do love that. I love how the, and Netflix has a ton of Scandinavian shows, which they all showed up. And I've been actually searching for them and watching all of them. And I just love how how they're directed, how the editing is so interesting.
I want to jump in here because I was just about to ask you, what is it about this, your latest Scandinavian kick? I know that as your husband of many, many years, I know that you go through these kicks, and I suspect part of this is fueled by all the sweaters and knitwear because it's getting colder out. But before we get into discussions of why you are currently obsessed with blonde men with beards chunky sweaters and capturing
Stop
terrorists.
Stop that, because they already called me shallow here.
Or whatever that. Well, you were shallow, sweetie. All right. But before we do that, let's talk about our Casper mattress. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest one night at a time. Casper is designed by humans for humans. Casper products are cleverly designed to mimic human curves, providing supportive comfort for all kinds of bodies. You spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. The experts at Casper work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places. The original Casper mattress contains multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Its breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. Casper offers two other mattresses, the Wave and the Essential. The Wave features a patent-pending premium support system to mirror the natural shape of your body. The Essential has a streamlined design at a price that won't keep you up at night. Casper also offers a wide array of other products like pillows and sheets to ensure an overall better sleep experience. And it's all designed, developed, and assembled in the U.S. Affordable prices. The prices are affordable because Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to you. There are hassle-free returns if you're not completely satisfied. And it's delivered right to your door in a small, how-did-they-do-that size box. There's free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. So, to get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/TLO, that's casper.com/TLO, and use code TLO at checkout. That's $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/TLO and using TLO at checkout. Thank you, Casper. Lorenzo, Blonde Men in Sweaters, what's it all about?
Oh my God, no, it's not just about Blonde Men in Sweaters.
All I ever say on our TV anymore.
Well, anyway, what I love about these shows, especially the Scandinavian zone, or any show in general, international, and if you go to Netflix, there's like great Japanese series now. There's like a series from Madrid, Spanish series too. There's like from so many different countries, and France, do you have a ton from France now? Anyway, what I love about these shows is that, in my opinion, you get to experience things that you really don't watching TV, watching films. Like, how many times we're watching a movie or watching a TV and it's like, oh my God, this is so LA, this is so New York,
right?
Because we're so used to this type of environment, geography, that we identify these places immediately. And I get the same experience watching these shows. The cinematography is usually amazing. So you get to see all these wonderful countries, landscapes, and everything that you normally don't have the opportunity. And it's just beautiful. And it does influence the narrative. It does influence the way things are shot. You watch all the Scandinavian shows and you see how, because it snows so much over there, so you have all that snow most of the time, and it's usually grayish, bluish colors. It's just beautiful, and it's a different way to create a story and to tell a story. And I love that about everything. You know, you get to see the houses. Like, I always laugh with the Scandinavian shows because all the houses look like IKEA stores.
It's true.
It's all very white and sleek and modern, very minimalistic.
Scandinavian.
Yeah. So I do love all that. The experience that you get in so many levels. It's not just, you know, being entertained by a TV show, but you just get to experience all these things.
Yeah, I think, because I know you and I've seen you do this so many times, go through these periods where you just consume all this stuff from like one culture or one country. I know for you, that's sort of like this cultural immersion thing where you come out of it with this much greater understanding of like Scandinavian television.
Right.
You just have this understanding of it because you just spent a month watching a dozen series.
And there is the argument
that he winds up being able to speak certain aspects language if he listens long enough. Go ahead.
The argument here could be that, oh, but you know, these are not real people, not real. That's real life. It's just a TV show. Yes, but you know, entertainment is always a reflection of realness.
Right.
So you do get a little bit, even if it's not the real thing, but you do get a sense of how things work. And what I love about Nobel, for example, is that I've seen so many shows and in movies about Afghanistan and American soldiers going to Afghanistan. This is the first time that I actually watch a show about a different country, a different culture, different people going to Afghanistan, and how that works for them, and how they think, what they think about it, and how that affects them. So it's very, very interesting. And I just love it, absolutely love it. If you like international shows, if you don't mind subtitles, some people do, you will love it. You'll love experience all these shows, especially if you have Netflix. They have a ton of new shows, and I'm sure you can find one that you like very much. So yeah, so that's why I keep watching them, and I really, really enjoy them.
Fabulous. And this is Lorenzo recommended?
Yes. Oh my God, very much.
And is the guy hot?
They're all hot because they're all my type, kind of like,
but
you know.
Let's not call him shallow. We're far from the shallow.
Oh,
now.
I know. Anyway, I know people. Somebody already said that, you know. Oh, Tom Lorenzo. Lorenzo, I, you know, always talked about like the shallow aspects of the show. No, I mean,
who said that? Someone said that?
Yes, yeah, in the comment section. Yes, once. Aww. Oh, I know, but I don't care. Anyway, I just thought it was funny, but it is true. I watch it for the men too. There
of
you go.
Of course you do. I know my man. I know my man. And if it looks like a Viking, he is ready to go.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's too much information right there. Anyway.
All right, let's take a break. Yes. And when we come back, we're going to dive deep on Julia Roberts' John, the new series
amazing
on Amazon
show
called Homecoming. We'll be right back.
Talking celebrities, pop culture, TV, and fashion. This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We are back on the Opinion Fest, and we did a little politics, and we did a little of Lorenzo's latest male obsessions that are not me. This portion of the podcast is being brought to you by Grove Collaborative. Grove Collaborative is the B Corporation that's changing the world. What does it mean to be a certified B Corporation? B Corporations are companies that have passed the most rigorous standards for businesses that prioritize social, environmental, and community well-being. And what is Grove Collaborative? It's a recurring shipment service that delivers all natural home, beauty, and personal care products directly to your door. Their aim is to make living a healthy lifestyle easy and accessible for you and your family. Every product they sell is backed by the Grove standard, which means that it's healthy, effective, eco-friendly, and affordable. You can shop with confidence knowing everything you buy from them is good for you, your family, your home, and even the planet. After your first Grove order, they'll set you up with personalized scheduled Grove shipments every 30 days so you'll never run out of the products you love. Your shipments are 100% customizable and you have complete control over what products you get and when you want to receive them. I've got more bullet points to talk about, but actually, I got to turn this over to Lorenzo
because I absolutely loved every single product. I mean, first
shipment we got from them.
When we got the box, everything is so amazing and it smells wonderful. It smells natural. It doesn't smell like a lot of chemicals.
Let me just say, it was
like
cleaning
that
products.
Yes.
It was, I mean, all kinds of cleaning for
of
your
stuff.
Toilet, for your dishes,
tissue,
for your dishwasher.
Everything.
It was paper towels. Yes. It was toilet paper. It was tissues.
Yes. It was everything that you need, you know, for your kitchen, for your bathroom, personal stuff too, for your face.
Beautifully packaged. High, super high quality
and,
products.
You know, I always... It's funny because you always like, we have these conversations and I remember unloaded the dishwasher one day and you said, oh my God, I wonder how much chemicals, how much products and chemicals we eat off those plates because,
you know,
with regular stuff. And that scared the hell out of me.
Right.
And now I'm like always looking for natural stuff or stuff that doesn't have a lot of chemicals and things like that.
Yeah. Every product is vetted to be the most effective, sustainable, natural product out there. There's no animal testing and they have innovative products like Seedling, the treeless paper products, that line that has paper towels and paper towels, tissues and toilet paper. They carry a bunch of national brands that most of us already use at home.
Right.
Life is easier and cheaper when you shop with Grove. You can auto schedule shipments, customize your baskets, and even text a real person to get product recommendations. With price matching and a 100% happiness guarantee, I can tell you it's a great deal and they beat other online retailers.
You're not going to be disappointed. I mean,
no,
the products are really awesome.
I mean, just to open up a box of, here's a month's supply of everything you need to keep your house clean, to keep your life clean, to keep your, you know, to take care of things. And it's high quality, eco-friendly,
exactly,
sustainable products.
You open a box of products that you know are, you know, it's concerned with the environment, with everything. You feel okay.
And all our
and
cats
safe.
Are lining up to listen to us say that there's no animal testing because they totally approve of that.
Exactly.
So if you haven't already tried Grove, you need to shop today before this deal runs out. For a limited time, our listeners who sign up can get an amazing free 30-day supply of Seedling, Grove's tree-free paper towels, toilet paper, and tissues, a free 60-day VIP membership, and a surprise bonus gift just for when you sign up and place an order of $20 or more. But I haven't told you where to go. You are supposed to go to grove.co. That's G-R-O-V-E grove.co/TLO. That's grove.co/TLO. Free 30 days supply of Seedling and free 60-day VIP membership and a surprise bonus gift. That's Grove Collaborative, grove.co/TLO. Highly recommended.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Grove Collaborative. And now we're going to dive back into TV so we can talk about Homecoming. Now, Homecoming is a new 10-part series on Amazon Prime starring Julia Roberts and Bobby Cannavale and Sissy Spacek. It's got kind of an interesting cast. Of course, what's most interesting about the cast is the fact that Julia Roberts has not done episodic television before, or if she has, she hasn't done it since the beginning of her career. I don't think she ever did it before. So this is kind of a big deal. It's one of the major movie stars of our age taking the plunge into television, which she's not the first to do it. I think you're seeing a lot of actresses around this age, mm-hmm. actresses who are at or around their 50th birthday, or like Nicole Kidman, are discovering that, you know, TV is a good place for them. And offering them things that
right.
movies are not
That's
offering.
That's what I was going to say. TV is offering great material. We just saw Sharp Objects. Big Little Lies.
Right, Amy Adams, that's the other one who made the plunge.
Right, so these are great roles, stories to tell, and involve women, you know.
Yeah, it's infamously hard for women over a certain age in Hollywood to find material that in the movies that they want to do. And right now, because we're at, it seems like we're never going to actually reach peak television because there's more and more of it every month. But we're at a moment where there's so much television and so many platforms on which you can view it that it's naturally producing more opportunities.
Right.
Just like television is also producing way more opportunities for actors of color, creators of color, directors and writers and producers. It has a way better trend. Just look at the Emmys every year. Look at the nominees of the Emmys versus the nominees at the Oscars, which is almost uniformly white. And you see the difference. So it's no, I think, surprise that Julia Roberts made this plunge. I also think I think part of that is because if you look at her IMDb listing over the last 5 years or so, she's become much, much more selective as to what she wants to do, /or she's not being offered that much. I find it hard to believe that she's not being offered much. She's still one of the most famous, you know, movie stars in the world. I suspect she just was getting crap. She was getting a lot of mom parts and a lot of, you know, just parts that she didn't want. What also makes Homecoming interesting is that it is produced and directed by Sam Esmail, who gave us Mr. Robot, starring Rami Malek. And there's a lot of they share a lot of DNA because both shows have to do with technology and science and conspiracy and paranoia. And also, to a certain extent, perception and memory. Both series had to do with perception and memory. I think Homecoming has way more to do with that than Mr. Robot did. But Mr. Robot did play around with Elliot's memories and his perception of the world around him in a similar manner. So there's a pedigree underlying this show. You've got one of the supreme female movie stars of the world deciding to star in it. And you've got this red-hot television director who's working in a milieu in which he's very, very good, which is political science, conspiracy, thriller type stuff. All right, I've done the intro. Lorenzo, why don't you talk for a few minutes?
Well, I really enjoy the show very much, and I'm glad that I wasn't expecting much because, quite frankly, I'm not crazy about Julia Roberts. I have to say, I'm not crazy about her work in general. I did like her. What was that movie? I keep forgetting.
It's the only one of hers that you liked, which was Erin Brockovich.
Yes, that one was absolutely amazing. I think it's one of the best movies.
Lorenzo, let me just jump in here. Lorenzo always used Julia Roberts as an example of a prime example of someone who is a movie star who is not necessarily all that good an actor. We'll debate this, but I'm not misrepresenting
I? Absolutely not.
You've said that a million times. You don't think she's all that good an actress. You just think she's a movie star.
Right. There are a lot of people, especially produced in Hollywood. You see that a lot in Hollywood. Famous actors doing a lot of movies, but they're good on camera. That doesn't mean they're talented. They're just comfortable in front of a camera. That's Gwyneth Paltrow. Harrison Ford, George Clooney. There's a ton of them. A ton of them in Hollywood.
Those would be his top four. Like, if you get Lorenzo... I'm not joking. No, if you get Lorenzo started on this conversation, those are the top four actors that he mentions.
That's what I wanted to mention.
Julia Roberts, George Clooney, and
Harrison Ford.
And Harrison Ford.
They're terrible actors, but they're good in front of the camera. They're comfortable. They know what to do. And for Hollywood, most of the time, that's all they need. Charismatic people, good-looking people, and, you know, and they do the job. That's how I'd put it. They do the job. Having said all that, Julia Roberts has gotten much, much better. I think she has developed more. She has more experience. And I have to give it to her. She is phenomenal in Homecoming. She is absolutely phenomenal.
One of the things, we would go back and forth about Julia Roberts over the years, and I didn't completely disagree with Lorenzo on the idea that she maybe isn't as good an actress as she is a movie star. But over the years, we would catch movies of hers, and I'd be like, well, look at her here. She's actually really good here. And Lorenzo would always say, yeah, she's playing someone pissed off because that's really close to her personality. Like, she's very, very good at playing annoyed women who have no patience for anybody around them. And I would say the latter half of her career, decade of her career, that a lot of the roles have been about that, about women who just don't have much patience.
She's famous for being difficult.
You know what, though, Lorenzo? You got to be careful about how you talk about that, because when we mention actresses with difficult reputations, we have to look at all the women that Harvey Weinstein slandered with that.
I'm not talking about that. Harrison Ford is also very difficult. I'm talking about people...
I wouldn't call her difficult. She's got a reputation, and this comes out in the interviews, and I think she's unapologetic about it. She doesn't suffer fools gladly. And you know what? Any movie, male movie star on her level, no one would bat an eye if he didn't suffer fools around him. So
I
don't think she's difficult. I just think she doesn't have a lot of patience for nonsense, and that's not a bad quality, but it is something we tend to vilify women for. Having said that... Like I said, over the years, I would get Lorenzo to concede that she gave a good performance, and he would come back and say, but yes, but she's playing another pissed off woman because that's what she's good at. You've always said that she was very limited in what she was good at. And then this role came out, and about halfway through the season, because when you first encounter her at certain point, the story bounces around. We are going to spoil some of a significant part of this. The story bounces around and shows you at two different stages in her life. And at the stage that takes place 4 years ago, she's at the top of her game. She's a little cocky, and there are times when she doesn't, you know, it's like the old Julia Roberts. It's like exactly what you see Julia Roberts play all the time, really self-possessed women who don't have a lot of patience for dumb men. And then it bounces to the future, 4 years past that, and her life's a wreck. She's got no direction, and we come to find out that she's literally a little brain damaged, and that's part of the reason why all of this is happening to her. And that version of Julia Roberts is not the kind that you always said she could play in her sleep. She is vulnerable. She is extremely confused. There are times when she's terrified, and there are times when she's so hurt. She's in so much pain that it's very tender, and it's a side of Julia Roberts. That level of vulnerability, that's what it comes down to, was something new in her performance. I had not seen that level of vulnerability if ever. I mean, maybe when she was younger. And I thought if you encounter any interviews with Julia promoting this project, the way she talks about Sam Esmail, the creator, director, producer, you could tell she had utmost confidence in him. She put herself in his hands. And when you have that, when you have an actor that really trusts and respects the creator who's molding their performance, and if the creator is smart and he knows what he's doing, you can get something out of the actor. You can get something out of that collaboration that is new. And I feel like that is something Julia Roberts brought to this.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely feel like we all said, Amy Adams, she's got the, you know, Emmy locked up. Well, I don't know.
Well, now I don't
know. If this is the same Emmy cycle, I don't know. Because Julia Roberts, man, that was an Emmy winning performance.
There's a ton of editing going on. And when they shift time periods, and her face, her expression, her performance, it's absolutely amazing. It's like almost two different people.
Yeah, it really is.
she is absolutely incredible. Incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm like I said, I have to give her that. And it's a great, amazing performance. The show is amazing. The lighting, the music's so creepy and wonderful.
Well, it's got that Mr. Robot feel to it.
Right. The editing, the everything about it, the lighting, the colors used. They're just beautiful, beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I really, really love the show. And I have to say, again, another one that I usually plays the same part over and over again, Bobby. What's his name?
Cannavale.
Cannavale. Yeah. He usually plays the same Italian type.
Sleazeball.
Yes.
And he kind of did this time, too. But I loved his performance.
God, his delivery. The way he reads his line, I mean, the way he interprets his lines, oh, my God, it's absolutely amazing.
What I want to get into in a minute is the ways in which the show and the story subvert your expectations. And Bobby Cannavale's performance is a major, major part of that because just based on his resume, based on how he looks and how he delivers lines, you are expecting a certain something from this character, a certain level of menace. And believe me, he gives it. He's a menacing character throughout this story, but there's a lot of nuance to it. However, before I talk about that, I would love to talk about how great we've been smelling lately.
We smell wonderful.
Listen, when it comes to things like cologne, that is something that I had to learn how to use and how to integrate into my life. And it's actually when we went on our first book tour that almost five years ago, that I really felt the need to integrate cologne into my life because we were traveling around and meeting people and leaning in close for pictures and stuff like that. And you just, you know, of course you shower and you wear your, you know, deodorant and whatever like that. But you want a little something to make sure that you smell good, to make sure that you smell right. And on top of that, I will never forget when we were on the book tour, everyone would lean in and for a picture or whatever and say, oh my God, what are you wearing? And I would tell them what I was wearing because I knew it was the right scent.
Who are you wearing?
Right. But it takes a lot to find those right scents. And it's always, you can wind up wasting a lot of money by, you know, spending $150 on a scent and it's just not the right scent for you, which is why we are loving our lovely new friends at Scentbird. That's S-E-N-T. B-I-R-D, Scentbird, because they will send you, you get to pick out designer perfumes that you can pick from over 450 designer brands. You can choose one for every month, and they will send you a 30-day supply. That's 120 sprays, so you always smell amazing, and you're not locked into a brand
right. Well,
if you don't want
to. That's what I was
going
to say.
That is the best part of it. We've received several different Scentbird bottles, and we just love them. The packaging is absolutely gorgeous. They come in these beautiful little dispensers where you twist them and they pop out like a lipstick and you can spray yourself. Everything's clearly labeled, and these are major brands. We ourselves, because obviously a lot of you are listening to us are women, we got cologne, but their perfume selections are amazing. The colognes that we were getting, like Helmut Lang cologne, Burberry cologne, like
Dolce Gabbana.
Chanel. Yes. Really, really good colognes. And you get a 1 month supply, 120 sprays. That's all you need to commit to. And you can keep getting a new one every month or, you know, change your selection every month.
That's what I love about it because I get tired of the same scent.
I agree.
And it's nice to keep changing and trying something different.
Yeah. And that's why we totally recommend Scentbird.com. That's Scentbird.com. With this exclusive offer, you'll get 50% off your first month today. That's only $7.50 for your first perfume. A 30-day supply, 120 sprays of any designer perfume you want to pick from their selection. That's Scentbird.com, S-E-N-T-B-I-R-D. I'm so aware of my Philadelphia accent that I have to be careful that I'm saying this correctly. Scentbird, Scentbird.com/TLO, and use my code TLO for 50% off your first month. That's Scentbird.com, Scentbird.com/TLO, and use code TLO for 50% off your first month. Sign on, smell amazing. Thank you, Scentbird.
The other thing I like about Homecoming, is that they're short episodes. And you know what?
Major selling point.
I long for them. I am getting tired of these 1.5 hour.
Well, we just burned through The Haunting of Hill House and Sabrina this month, in the last month, and both of those were over 10 hours of commitment.
Right.
And we enjoyed them, but they sag in the middle. And there's always this need to pad things out, to fill out those 10 hours. And the great thing about, honestly, the number one great thing about
Homecoming
is that it's concise and self-contained.
Right, right.
In fact, they're already talking about a season two, and I am so against the idea. It's not even funny, because the first season wrapped its entire story up, answered the questions that needed to be answered, moved all of the characters to emotional spaces that were satisfying, though some of them wound up very wounded and damaged by the end. It was still a holistically satisfying ending. I have no interest in following up on it.
I remember when we finished watching the show, the first thing you said was like, I'm glad they kept it simple. They kept it to one single plot. To one single point, as opposed to just make it way too complicated and just telling one story.
What's great about it is, I'm sorry.
No, that's it.
Because it's Sam Esmail, the creator of Mr. Robot. And while I will continue to pay tribute to the man's ability to do a conspiracy thriller to really convey paranoia and perception on screen, he's so great at that. Mr. Robot, like so many puzzle box shows, it just eventually wound up its own ass and got too convoluted and brought in all this weird. I have no idea what's going on. I devoured the first season of that show, liked to the point of almost loving the second season, and then quickly dropped off past that, because these conspiracy shows should not last long. Otherwise, in order for them to last long, you either have to stop giving out information and just make everything a mystery, or constantly give out information that expands the conspiracy to ever larger, more convoluted areas. The fabulous damn thing about Homecoming is it's one conspiracy. And while it's unfolding, it could go in any direction. But when you get to the end of the story, you're like, oh, okay. That's what that was. It's explained. It gets cut off, and it ends. It ends in such a great way, too. It ends ignominiously. It just kind of falls apart. There's this whole conspiracy, this whole thing, and then it comes down to basically Bobby Cannavale being so much of an asshole that he gets thrown under the bus, and then the whole thing falls apart.
Right.
I loved that.
I know.
It didn't reach to the highest level. I thought, oh God, we're going to be in the White House and it's going to be the UN. No, it was this administrator in this company who was just too damn ambitious. You thought when he was, okay, we're getting into spoilers. When he was portraying or trying to like flirt with her and be like her boyfriend and everything like that, didn't you think he was going to kill her?
Right.
Like you thought, it was like, oh God, she's dead. He's going to kill her. There's going to be a, you know, blah, blah. It never even went to that point, because he's not some criminal mastermind. He's just some doofus with bad moral code who got in over his head and tried to contain something. I also love Shea Whigham as the Department of Defense guy. First off, I love Shea Whigham. In a lot of roles. He's just been this great character actor for a lot of years. I also got to say, I think the guy's got like a low-key hotness going on. He's got like this low-key middle-aged hotness going on. But he plays this, you know, government functionary who winds up stumbling into this conspiracy, is mostly confused through most of it, gets humiliated several times. There's no big shootout. There's a confrontation where he actually gets humiliated and made and emasculated, and then he files his report and the whole thing falls apart. Like that's the end of it. Right. The government agent came in, filed a report, and ended this conspiracy, and that's how the show ends. I loved that.
It is
literally the most appealing thing to me about this show, is that it avoided cliche across the board, but it operated well within its constraint. Like, you know, when you're in a conspiracy, a twist and turn kind of story, and you want to avoid cliche, what happens is you start making wilder and wilder twists and turns. But Esmail, in this instance, just kept everything very self-contained. It felt like it was going to tumble out of control at any moment. It felt like there was just going to be bodies piling up before the end. But that didn't happen, and there was no sense of disappointment that that didn't happen. It was actually quite satisfying that it got wrapped up.
Right, right.
People were very damaged and very hurt. Relationships were destroyed. I'm not saying that there was some sort of happy ending.
Right.
But it was honestly one of the most satisfying season endings, and I would hope series, like, as much as I love Sharp Objects, I did not like the ending at all.
Right.
So it wasn't very satisfying. Haunting of Hill House, hated the ending of that. But this had a great ending.
I thought the whole thing was great. Just the whole package was just perfect. When it ended, I was so satisfied, entertained,
right.
Satisfied. And it was great. And everybody was good. Everybody was good. The mother.
Sissy Spacek.
Oh,
amazing.
Sissy Spacek also. Yeah.
I have to admit, even in their scenes together, I was like, I'm really trying to picture who the father is in this picture because I don't see Sissy Spacek giving birth to Julia Roberts. There's no physical resemblance whatsoever. And their acting styles are completely, completely different. And yet, I think it kind of worked because they had this sort of distant, cantankerous relationship with each other. So that fit really well. Marianne Jean-Baptiste.
Oh, my God.
Amazing actress. Love her.
Mm-hmm.
And she played the mother of a soldier in this. We don't really get into what this is about, but it is about medical testing on soldiers that wind up affecting their brains and affecting their memories in somewhat disastrous ways. And her son gets experimented on. So she's the mother of a soldier trying to find justice, trying to find out what's happening to her son. And it's just a fabulous role. I've loved
her
since like the 80s when she was doing those working class British films.
She's amazing.
Her and Julia Roberts together.
Yes, they're amazing.
They're actually better together than her and Sissy Spacek because Marianne Jean-Baptiste and Julia Roberts are actually similar to each other in a lot of personality-wise,
mm-hmm.
actorly. They're very, very, very strong,
right.
Very, very forceful in their performances. So to see them go up against each other, and I'm that's not even characterizing it well enough because Julia Roberts backs down in almost every scene she has with her because Marianne Jean-Baptiste is just a force of nature. Anyway, this is highly Tilo recommended if you haven't seen it. If you haven't seen it, you've just been spoiled on a good chunk of it.
Let's mention the soldier. He's also very good, the actor who plays the soldier.
The Stephen James.
Yeah, he's really, really good.
He's the main character.
I think they picked a great actor to play the part because he's just he's just that soldier.
He did a great job of walking a line that was somewhere between soothing and competent and also a little creepy and, oh my God, there's something wrong with this guy.
Absolutely.
Charming as hell, but you couldn't, like something seemed really off.
Oh my God, that's a great way to describe your character. Yes,
that's exactly.
Yes.
In fact, when you get to his final scene, he's just charming as hell. He doesn't seem off anymore.
Right,
he's just charming. An adorable actor.
Oh,
really
he's
cute,
adorable and
good-looking
cute.
Guy.
Yeah.
I have never heard of him before, but I felt like this was like a star turn for him, like because he's a major character in this, and he and Julia Roberts have tons of scenes together, and they have insane chemistry, even though pretty sure she's about twice his age.
Right.
Not that that's scandalous, but it is something in the mix that he is a 25-year-old black man. And she's,
in terms of experience,
she's a middle-aged white woman, but they have insane chemistry. Not just, I guess it's sexual. There is a sexual attraction there, but there's sort of an attraction of personality to each other. They actually just seem to be a little infatuated with the other one.
Right.
She plays his therapist, and he's a soldier, so it's all kinds of, bad stuff in the mix of that
sort
of thing.
But it's a great show, and I think Amazon is bringing good stuff now.
I think everyone's trying to bring their A game. I think Netflix has been having a great quarter.
Oh, my God, yes.
They've been throwing. I mean, I can't wait to see The Outlaw King comes out today, the one with Chris Pine in it.
Right.
That just dropped today. I haven't seen it yet. I do feel like the streaming services are really starting to pump up what they're trying to do. The competition is out there. And now you've got things like Disney's having its own streaming service. DC Comics has its own streaming. Like, everyone's just going to have their own streaming service. I don't know how that works in the long run, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
We're not going to pay hundreds of dollars per month for all these streaming
services.
But it's
fresh and wonderful to have that choice because, most networks, they have such a strong agenda. Whatever they're doing, their advertisers and everything. And this is a little more free, I think.
Mm-hmm.
More creative, in a way, I think. Anyway.
Anyway, it's Tilo recommended.
Yes, very, very good. Highly recommend
it's actually, in my opinion, it's way better than Mr. Robot ever was because it gets to the point and gets it done. I really, truly hope there is not a follow-up season to this. I would hate the idea of revisiting these characters.
Yeah. And from...
I liked the growth that she showed by the end. I liked where he wound up at the end in his life. I liked where Bobby Cannavale wound up. Like, I don't want to continue any of this.
There's no point to continue. And that's I probably what's
won't
annoying.
Watch it. I'm out of protest. You know, I didn't think there should be a Big Little Lies second season.
I was just about to say that. Yes.
But then they brought in Meryl Streep, and I was like, oh, but even that's actually pretty good.
I know, but even so, I mean, I think. Yeah, I'm still going to watch it. Just let it go. Anyway, Lawrence was saying that Julia Roberts is amazing.
And that is something else for Lorenzo to say
amazing,
that.
Amazing, amazing, amazing performance. Anyway, that's
so it. Homecoming on Amazon, which we totally mostly just spoiled for you, but it really is really, really good. And for those of you who have seen it, we'd love to hear your thoughts
in the comment section
about
section,
what
please.
You thought of it, because we thought it was pretty darn amazing. All right, I believe that's all we're touching on this week. So, Kitten, thank you for listening to our rambling
cartoon voices once again. And follow us on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere.
Yes. Love you. Mean it. Have a great week. Bye-bye.